you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us. Coming up next hour, Ron Brownstein, terrific journalist, will be joining me to talk about his new book on 1974 Los Angeles, music, television, films, what we exported from LA, and the significant national effect of what was created here in LA during that year. That's coming up next hour, Air Talk on KPCC. We will also be looking at that second-degree manslaughter charge that was just mentioned on NPR, filed against the police officer who resigned yesterday after shooting and killing a man in suburban Minneapolis after he was stopped in his vehicle. We'll talk about that case as well as the defense beginning to present its case in Derek Chauvin's murder trial for the murder of George Floyd. But we turn our attention first to the world of COVID-19 and vaccination. Of course, yesterday, the surprising announcement about Johnson & Johnson's vaccine, the recommendation it be paused, California's Department of Public Health then putting out its directive to county and city health departments best not to give the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So they are, of course, pausing it. The CDC is meeting today, its advisory team, to take a look at the six cases of blood clots, including one fatality, which were experienced by women after receiving the COVID-19 vaccine from J&J. With us is epidemiologist and professor of medicine at UCLA School of Public Health, Dr. Timothy Brewer. Dr. Brewer, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
Let's talk first of all about the decision to pause the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. There's been a lot of criticism of the CDC and FDA over this, with people saying that this goes too far given the very, very rare incidences, as serious as they are. Do you think the decision to pause was an overreaction?
No, Larry, I don't, because I think the important message that the CDC and the Food and Drug Administration are trying to send to the American public is we take your safety very seriously, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure these vaccines are safe. So I think it was that abundance of caution that led to this decision.
Is it possible, though, that with the delay in people getting vaccinated, you could actually have a greater overall health risk to the population by delayed vaccine than with the very low risk of blood clotting from using J&J?
Well, that's certainly a concern. And so I think the good news that Pfizer said they were going to up their production and actually exceed their targets by 10% and have more vaccine available is really terrific. But as we've discussed in other shows, there is a lot of concern about these vaccines and vaccine hesitancy. So I think it is reasonable to let the American public know that the CDC and FDA are doing everything they can to make sure these vaccines are safe and effective.
For those who received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine within the past couple of weeks, what do you recommend they do at this point?
At this point, what you should do is just keep an eye out for severe headaches, abdominal pain, leg swelling. If you're more than 3 weeks out from your vaccine, you really don't need to worry at all. All of these clotting events have occurred within 5 days and 20 days after vaccination, either with the Johnson & Johnson or the AstraZeneca vaccine. So if you're more than 3 weeks out from your vaccine, really no concern at all.
Do you think we're ever going to see the AstraZeneca vaccine get emergency use authorization from the FDA?
Unclear. You know, I think there have been so many hiccups along the way in getting the AstraZeneca vaccine out that if Between Pfizer and Moderna and probably Johnson and Johnson again, we can meet the needs of the American public, then it's probably unlikely that the AstraZeneca vaccine will be listed in the United States.
It's your chance to ask questions of Dr. Timothy Brewer, UCLA School of Public Health professor and noted epidemiologist. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. You can make your comment known via Twitter at AirTalk. You can also post on the AirTalk Facebook page, 866-893-5722. Great chance to get your questions answered. What is this advisory team at the CDC likely going to be looking at with the blood clotting cases from J&J?
So what they'll try to do is they'll look at the data associated with who got the vaccines and were there any other potential risk factors for blood clots. For example, we know that both from the European data and the U.S. data that most of these cases tend to occur in women of reproductive age. One potential risk factor would be oral contraceptives. However, there are data now published in the New England Journal from both Norway and Germany suggesting that this is actually an immune response related to an antibody generated against platelets, which are part of the clotting cascade.
Also wanted to ask you about a study of 50,000 Californians who developed COVID-19. The study found those who had been the most active before getting sick with the coronavirus were the least likely to be hospitalized or die as a result of their illness. So the study suggesting that exercise might have a protective effect. But I wonder if the real issue, and obviously exercise is valuable, that's a given, but that if the issue here is that people that more regularly exercise tend to be less overweight or obese, lower rates of diabetes, other things that we know are risk factors for severe cases of COVID-19, could the exercise be a proxy for the other things?
Well, you're exactly right, Larry, and I did have a chance to read the study, and they do try to control for that, but it's an observational study, and you can't tell the direction. So is it exercise protects you from COVID-19, or people who are healthier are more likely to exercise and therefore less likely to be at risk for serious disease? But you're exactly right. The bottom line is exercise is good for you, helps to prevent heart disease, obesity, diabetes. So if it helps to prevent COVID-19 serious disease, just one more reason to get out there and exercise.
Yes, I didn't mean to suggest there's no benefit, because clearly it'll help. It'll help with other things. We know that it's a benefit in treating diabetes. We know it's helpful with controlling blood pressure. We know it's helpful for losing weight, all of those things. So very positive regardless. Again, your questions for Dr. Brewer, we're at 866-893-KPEC. Or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We see one of the biggest differences in the population of people who are embracing vaccination and those who are vaccine resistant is gender. The percentage of women who are getting vaccinated is considerably higher than the percentage of men. We also know women are much more likely to go to the doctor and to, you know, get regular checkups than men are. Men are more resistant in on average when it comes to medical treatment. Do you think that that's what we're seeing in the resistance to the vaccine, or do you suspect something else is at play?
Really hard to know, but the bottom line is it's extremely unfortunate. So, for example, here in California, though slightly more cases of COVID-19 occur in women than in men, so women account for 51% of all cases of COVID-19 in California, men account for 58% of the deaths. And that's true nationally as well, where being a male accounts for 54 to 55% of all deaths. So we certainly need men to go out and get vaccinated, and hopefully we can develop the messages that can address their concerns and protect them from this potentially very serious disease.
Well, in fact, I'd love to hear from you if you're have a relationship in which there is a gender divide on masking, or I shouldn't say masking, on vaccination, although you can add masking to that, because that also we know men are more reluctant to mask. But I'm interested to hear how you're dealing with that in your household. And this comes from Jenny in the Mid-Wilshire District, who says, I've been vaccinated, but my husband doesn't want to get vaccinated. She wondered, can we both still be at risk of carrying and spreading the virus? Should we be warning others, wearing masks? Jenny, we'll hear what Dr. Brewer says about that. What do you think?
So Jenny, the answer is yes. So the good news for you is that were you to become infected with COVID-19, you're much more likely to be protected from having serious disease, hospitalization, or death. However, we know from studies from Israel and other places that people who have been vaccinated can still become infected. And so, yes, when you go to the store, please do wear your mask and do your physical distancing. Unfortunately for your husband, depending on his age and whether or not he has comorbid diseases, he may be at risk for serious disease. And as someone who has taken care of COVID-19 patients in the hospital, including in the intensive care unit and patients on mechanical ventilation, I can tell you this can be an extremely serious disease. So hopefully your husband will talk with his or healthcare provider, get those concerns addressed, and get vaccinated as soon as possible.
Again, I'd love to hear from you if this is a point of dispute in your relationship, where you've got a spouse or partner who just is vaccine resistant. How are you dealing with it? We know this often breaks down along gender lines because we do see that differential in the surveys that men are on average more resistant to vaccination than are women. 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. Let's see, we have Kurt in Valley Village. I got my Johnson & Johnson vaccination 8 days ago. I just got a text from CVS, where I received the vaccination, indicating if I had leg pain, I should contact a doctor. Wondering if the doctor, if you know, is this referring to general leg pain or leg swelling? What symptoms specifically?
So, Kurt, the symptoms that we're most concerned about are leg swelling, trouble breathing, severe headaches, especially those that occur between 5 and 20 days after receiving the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. However, if you develop leg pain that's unusual for you, even in the absence of swelling, I would get in contact with your healthcare provider, because there are blood tests that we can do that can look for the risk of blood clots.
Nylon in Redondo Beach says, since so few people develop blood clots after using the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, doesn't it make sense to do a deep dive into those individuals to find out what their commonalities are?
So that's exactly what they're trying to do, and that's part of the meeting that will happen today. And that's part of what was done with the two publications in the New England Journal of Medicine, where they looked at the 11 patients in Germany, for example, and did a whole series of tests to truly understand why did these primarily women develop these blood clots. And what they found was there is an antibody there that reacts to the platelets and causes the blood clots to form. So this is very important finding, because it actually tells us how to treat these blood clots more safely.
Tamara in Laguna Niguel has it been looked at that birth control could be behind the clotting, because there are clotting risks with birth control, especially since these are premenopausal women? That would seem a possibility to Tamara. What do you think, Dr. Brewer?
So that certainly was a concern because Tamara is right that oral contraceptives can be associated with the formation of blood clots, and these were young reproductive age women. So I think that certainly was a concern. We know from the study in Norway that at least two of the six cases were on oral contraceptives, and an older woman was on hormone replacement therapy. However, at least based on these two preliminary data, studies that have been published, it looks like it's actually an immune response that's generating autoantibodies against platelets that's causing the clotting.
We have Jody in Redlands who says, I'm on a blood thinner. I had an embolism a few months ago. Is it still safe for me to be vaccinated?
Yes, Jody, it is, but I would use either the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine when you got vaccinated.
866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Robert in Woodland Hills says he's had both of his Moderna vaccinations, but wondering what the effect of donating blood might be. Would it have any effect on his own immunity by doing that?
No, not at all. Donating blood is completely safe and a wonderful thing to do because we depend on voluntary donors to have a safe and secure blood supply to be able to do a number of the important surgeries and treatments that we do for cancer and organ transplant and things like that. So thank you very much for being a blood donor.
866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We'll continue our conversation with UCLA School of Public Health Professor Dr. Timothy Brewer, noted epidemiologist, joining us. And I hope you'll join me this coming Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock, for the 19th Annual Film Week Academy Awards Preview. This year, we come to you. It'll be a virtual event, but still live. 10 Film Week critics join me in conversation on the major Academy Award categories, and we'll have a chance to take some questions from members of our virtual audience as well. Please join us Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock, 19th Annual Film Week Academy Awards Preview. Get your tickets now, kpecc.org/in-person. Back in 1 minute. It's Air Talk on KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. Good to have you with us. Federal prosecutors say they will not be filing charges against the officer who fatally shot a woman during the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol in January. My recollection, she was a Southern California resident. We're taking your calls for Dr. Timothy Brewer. We're at 866-893-KPECC. That's 866-893-5722. The AirTalk page, kpecc.org. European countries are taking divergent action on the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine after the U.S. government came out with its recommendation to pause the vaccine yesterday. Some European Union members have put the vaccine on hold, but Poland, France, and Hungary said they'll go ahead and administer the doses that they have because there's tremendous pressure on the EU's 27 countries to speed up their immunization drives. So, you know, Dr. Brewer, this is a lot of pressure that they're facing right now, and then having the shortage of the J&J vaccine doesn't make it any better, and particularly countries like Spain that have, you know, been really hit hard in recent weeks. What do you think would be the most prudent course of action for them?
So, Larry, you're exactly right. It depends on what your available options are. So if you have an option to use other vaccines like we do in the United States, so we have a fairly robust supply right now of Pfizer and Moderna vaccine, then I think it makes sense to put the Johnson & Johnson on hold while they try to sort this all out. However, if that's the only vaccine that you have available to you, or it's the primary vaccine along with the AstraZeneca, COVID is a very serious disease. It has killed almost 560,000 people in this country alone. And so And the risk of these clots is very low. I think you can safely go ahead with the vaccine, particularly if you're making people aware of the potential side effects to look for and following them up for anyone who develops symptoms after vaccination.
All right. We're talking with Dr. Timothy Brewer, UCLA School of Public Health professor and epidemiologist. Jerry in West Hills says, I have a friend who used to suffer from cluster headaches. He had been in remission from that for a couple of years, but 3 or 4 days after getting his first Pfizer shot, he started getting cluster headaches again. Wondering if you have any insight into this, Dr. Brewer.
So I'm not aware of any relationship between the vaccine and cluster headaches. I would assume it's just a coincidence. But I think if his headaches continue, particularly if they're more severe than usual, then he should see his healthcare provider just to make sure that there's nothing else going on.
Greg in the city of Orange says, I wasn't able to get my second Moderna shot exactly on the day I was supposed to. I had a pneumonia vaccination as well between the first and second shot. He said it was 35 days between first and second shot of Moderna. Is that a problem? We should probably revisit the recommended window on both Moderna and Pfizer vaccinations.
So in general, Greg, getting the vaccine later is not a problem. So we still recommend that you try to do it as approved by the FDA, the 21 or 28 day, depending on which vaccine you get. But delaying it has not been a problem. And there are emerging data to say that even if you get it later, getting that second dose is still very helpful.
Stacy in West Los Angeles said, what are the ways of treating blood clots? And if it is related to a vaccination, would you treat the clot differently than you would a typical blood clot?
So yes, Stacy, you would. That's why it was so important to figure out the mechanism of the clotting. So oftentimes when people come in with clots, say from a blood clot after a long plane ride, we use a medicine called heparin, which is a type of blood thinner. But heparin can actually make these blood clots worse because these antibodies bind with heparin and activate the platelets. So we actually have to use immunoglobulin and other approaches to treat these clots. That's why these studies from Norway and Germany were so important, because they give us insights how to appropriately treat these patients and hopefully reduce the terrible mortality that's been associated with this very rare problem.
Cheryl in the Crenshaw District of Los Angeles said, I had my first Moderna shot about 3.5 weeks ago. I started to feel some effects, including brain fog and a headache, about 5 days later. The symptoms dissipated but returned the following week. I'm wondering if it was a delayed reaction, and should I still go forward with getting the second dose, which, since Cheryl says was 3.5 weeks ago, I assume is a few days away.
So, Cheryl, if you have any concerns, you should talk with your healthcare provider. But in general, yes, you should go ahead and get the second dose. These are non-replicating vaccines. I'm not quite sure what caused that delayed reaction. We do know that people can get delayed reactions, particularly skin rashes, but they resolve without any treatment at all. But if you have any concerns, I think a discussion with your healthcare provider would be very reasonable.
Barbara in Silver Lake says, I took a prescription medication, methotrexate, 2 days after my first Moderna shot, and then again a day after my second shot. After I did that, the CDC released guidance saying that you shouldn't take that medication for 2 weeks after getting your shot. So Barbara's wondering, is her vaccine less effective now?
So Barbara, I'm not aware of any data. Methotrexate is an immune-suppressing medicine. That's why the CDC made that particular recommendation. In general, we do not screen people to see if the vaccine has generated the immune response it's supposed to. But if you have any concerns, you could talk to your healthcare provider And there are actually ways that we can screen people to see if they've had a response to the vaccine. So that's something that could be done if you and your healthcare provider thought it were appropriate.
So that's something that people should consider then, if there are mitigating factors that might have inhibited the immune response. Because I know the advice has been that people shouldn't, as a rule, look to get an antibody test to see what the response was from the vaccine, because the vaccine's quite consistent in generating that response. You hold to that view, that should not be routine?
Definitely. So most people will have a very good response to the vaccine, and we know from national studies in Israel that these are very effective vaccines, even under routine conditions. So no reason for anybody to routinely get screened with an antibody test. However, if there are extenuating circumstances, the best thing to do would be for that individual to have a talk with his or her healthcare provider to decide whether or not it made sense in unusual circumstances.
866-893-KPECC. You can ask your question also on the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. You can tweet at AirTalk with your questions for Dr. Timothy Brewer, UCLA School of Public Health, where he's professor of medicine and a noted epidemiologist as well. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Our producer, Natalie, was wondering if when you donate blood, do they do an antibody test as a part of that process so that you might be able to get a sense? I didn't think that looked at potential COVID-19 response, but what do you know about that?
So, Natalie, no, I'm not aware that they screen for COVID-19. So they do screen for infections to make sure the blood is safe and can be used in transmission, in transfusions, but I'm not aware that they screen for COVID-19 antibody
and
response.
If someone has COVID-19, could it be passed on through the blood that way in a donation if they had it and it wasn't caught?
If they had active viremia, I assume the answer is probably yes. I'm not aware of any data to say that COVID-19 has been transmitted through a blood transfusion. I think had that occurred, we would have heard about it, and I've not heard that.
Yeah. Well, and of course, testing the blood supply also protects against that. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Philip in Westwood says he's about a week away from his second dose, but that he had to get other vaccinations after the first shot for meningitis, tetanus, and flu, wondering should he delay his second COVID shot because of the other vaccinations?
So in general, Philip, the answer is no. If you have any concerns, you can talk with your healthcare provider, but no, it should not be a problem to get your vaccine next week, having gotten those other vaccines. And it's terrific that you're getting caught up on all of your vaccinations.
We have Chris in Woodland Hills. The second injection, I felt really nothing afterward, no after effects. Does that mean that I didn't get coverage from it?
No. So there's no corresponding relationship between how bad you react to the vaccine and whether or not you've had an effective immune response. So terrific that you didn't have any problems with it, but it has no bearing on the effectiveness of the vaccine.
Yeah, my wife and mother, both very fortunate that way after their second shots, just, you know, very, very limited response to it. So I'm hopeful with my second shot. It's similar for me. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Mark wonders, are we making changes in future vaccines, non-COVID vaccines, based on what we've learned in this pandemic? For example, could a flu vaccine be switched to mRNA so that we would be able to incorporate strains of the flu perhaps at a later date, and maybe the vaccine would be more amenable to alteration more quickly.
So, Mark, you're correct that the technology behind these vaccines has been under development for years. And one of the goals is to use this technology for other vaccines, including influenza, HIV, Ebola, a number of different diseases. And so this is a very active area of research. And what we've learned from the COVID-19 vaccines will help to make other vaccines better.
So we've had a couple listeners who have contacted us to say that when they donated blood, there actually was a test done for COVID-19 antibodies. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Yet another reason to give blood. So Jules says, I've given blood 3 times since September, and the results on COVID antibodies come back a few days after a donation. And Andy and Hawthorne said the very same thing. I'm a regular blood donor at Red Cross, and they do that test for COVID-19 antibodies. So again, don't know if that's universal. Well, great to hear that for at least some of the donors, that is something that is happening and they're getting those results. 866-893-KPCC. Orange County announced that it is establishing a digital vaccine record for county residents. This is not mandatory by any means, but it's an option. It's another way for people to have a vaccine record. You know, and with more venues potentially requiring, like Staples Center is going to require for all of their events that you either show a negative COVID-19 test within 72 hours or that you show proof of full vaccination and that it's been more than 2 weeks since your second dose of the vaccine. So, Dr. Brewer, your thoughts about having a digital record, not just the little card that documents one's vaccinations.
I think the important thing to remember, whether it's the card or the digital record, is that these records do contain some personal information, usually your name and your birth date. So however you store that information, you want to do it in a way that's safe and protected, and don't publish it on your Facebook page or tweet it or anything like that.
All right. Dr. Brewer, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure. We learn so much from you and appreciate your taking the time. Look forward to talking with you again in a few days. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Timothy Brewer, UCLA School of Public Health Professor of Medicine and epidemiologist who has advised the World Health Organization, the National Institutes of Health, and the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC, the KPCC app, and streaming at kpcc.org. Coming up, we'll talk about a mega merger in Spanish language media back in 1 minute.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.